This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Coming up in hour two, we'll be joined by Chris Weidman, NHL defenseman. He'll stop by his thoughts on the playoffs so far. And another full slate of games tonight. We'll see game two between the Nashville Predators and the Vancouver Canucks. Things went swimmingly for Vancouver on Sunday. Game two, and where the streets have no name, awaits the Vancouver Canucks. Ian McIntyre from Sportsnet joins me now for further comments. Ian, how are you today, bud?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I mean, Canucks, Winnipeg Jets, Edmonton Oilers, all undefeated in the playoffs. And the Maple Leafs, even the Maple Leafs, the only blemish on our national record so far. One and one with a big win last night.
Hammer them, Ian. Do all of BC proud and Western and hammer the Maple Leafs for splitting with the Boston. Well, let me ask you then, because the main focus of this is going to be the Vancouver Canucks. But we've seen a little bit of everything, and including some good old-fashioned hockey dumb, courtesy of the New York Islanders yesterday in that closing sequence against the Carolina Hurricanes. What has stood out outside of Vancouver, which we'll get to? What has stood out to you so far about these playoffs?
Oh, wow. I would say just the intensity, and maybe I'm paying more attention to it because the Canucks haven't been in it. So I saw what it was like in Vancouver. But normally, you know, the playoffs have a certain pace to them.
Yes.
Just like the regular season, and things elevate in time. It seems like we're at, I don't know, conference final game six level already in some of these first round games with the pace and the intensity. And in the West, everything is just so wide open. You know, Nashville is a wild card team, but I don't think anybody would be stunned if Nashville, say, went to a conference final or maybe even the Stanley Cup final. It's so even. It feels like each game, the moment the puck is dropped, the game is in the balance because there's so little between the teams.
Well, yeah, that sort of winks at what I've been trying to get across here for the past couple of weeks, and that is I look at the Western Conference, and unlike the East, there are no upsets in the West. Like, would anyone be surprised to see Colorado, despite their goaltending issues, come back and win that series? No, ditto for the Nashville Predators. Like, go right down the list. And listen, we just saw what Vegas did last night to the Dallas Stars, and I'm sure there's some concern once again about the Dallas goaltending, but there are no potential upsets here in the Western Conference. That is how A, powerful, and B, how powerful all these teams are, and B, the parity amongst the elite level teams. Like, I've maintained all along, the better hockey this year is in the West, and we're seeing it play out right now.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jeff. As a Westerner, I appreciate the support, but I think you're right. And certainly, the field is deeper in the West, for sure.
Yep.
Because you look at the 16 playoff teams, Islanders, Capitals are the two that really stand out as, you know, being below it. And I'm not saying they don't deserve to be in the playoffs, but they're just not at the level of most of the teams. And it's been this way all season in the West. And if you look at, say, just the Canucks again and this, you know, quaint little Pacific Division, they start the season, I would say the consensus was playoff bubble team, you know, 90 something points. Mm-hmm. And if things go right, you know, the famous quote from Jim Rutherford, now everything has to go right for them to make the playoffs.
Yep.
Maybe they'll be a playoff team. Maybe they won't, but they'll be in that mosh pit. But in their division, okay, you've got the Edmonton Oilers, who was everybody's pick to go to the Stanley Cup final. You got the defending champion, Vegas Golden Knights. And then, you know, the Kings are always a tough out and have kind of risen and fallen with the tides this season. But, you know, and who would have thought the Canucks would come out of that division? But the whole year, mm-hmm. even down the stretch when Edmonton and the Canucks were comfortably ahead, there was a sense of, well, it doesn't really matter, because no matter who you get in the first round, you could just say, okay, you start at home or we start at home. It doesn't matter because they're all so even. Mm-hmm. And every series is a toss-up. But, it's fantastic hockey. Yeah, it would be nice. You know, we saw here in 2011, the Canucks were easily the best team in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. Across the board, all the metrics. They were just dominant in the regular season. And then they barely got by the Chicago Blackhawks in Game 7, but then they were a dominant team again, right up until Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final against the Bruins. There's no dominant team, and I think that's partly what makes this playoff field so hard to handicap, but also so much fun to watch, because there isn't a 120-point team where you say, well, if they just play their game, then nobody is going to beat them. I think everybody is fallible and everybody is capable, and that's an exciting combination.
Okay, Ian, you know me. I'm prone to exaggeration and blowing up what other people might look at as small moments and say, like, no, that's the game right there. How far off would I be if I said that Vancouver-Nashville game won by the Vancouver Canucks, that whole thing, the most important moment in the game is Rick Tocchet not calling for an appeal on the Luke Evangelista slash to the hand of Thatcher Demko on the Ryan O'Reilly goal?
No.
Let me explain my thinking on that.
Okay.
One.
All right.
So Nashville scores, right? And we see the slash. Now, Demko's hot. It's funny. I talked to Jake Allen about this on the show yesterday. He said, like, I can understand Demko being hot and wanting a review right away. I get that. That's the emotion of it. Sometimes coaches get caught up in it. I'm sure one of the video coaches said, don't do it. There's a good chance we won't win this one. But you can understand a coach getting carried away. Here's his goaltender. Sure. You saw the hit to the hand, like all of it. If he calls for a review on that one, it doesn't go his way. Vancouver's shorthanded, and a one-goal lead can turn into a two-goal lead pretty quickly. I don't know. Ifs and buts, candies and nuts, we all understand the Merry Christmas. But does that one, on the scale of things going right for Vancouver, did the non-call by Rick Tocchet have a minimal or profound effect on that game?
Well, it was a huge decision, and I apologize for laughing. I'm not laughing at you, Jeff.
No,
I'm laughing
okay.
at my laughing at my lack of response.
I work with Elliot. Don't worry about it. You're not going to offend me. I work with Elliot.
Yeah, I'm worse. I'm used to the high inside fastball and the curveball in the dirt, but that one I wasn't ready for. But I'll say this. Yes, it was a huge moment in the game. And of course, the review that you're talking about was on a power play goal. So the last thing the Canucks want to do is put them right back on the power play. Vancouver did, though, I'll note, very capably kill the other three penalties that they faced. I think they gave up one shot on each advantage. So the penalty killing overall was actually a strength for Vancouver. The Canucks have been excellent this year at these reviews. As far as I can recall, and I don't have time to check my notes, I think they lost one. And all their other challenges were successful. It's Dylan Crawford, Mark Crawford's son, who runs the video department for the Canucks. And Rick Tocchet defers to him, and for good reason, because until that one call, and it was late in the season, and even then on the review, it was kind of dodgy. That looked like maybe the Canucks could have had it go their way. They haven't been wrong. So when Dylan Crawford tells Rick Tocchet, no, this isn't, we don't want to challenge this one, Tocchet is okay. And I think it was a good non-challenge myself, because it did look like the contact with the glove was just after the puck had passed it. I don't think it didn't look like a challenge that they were going to win. And, you know, Thatcher Demko is a pretty chill guy in the net. So if he's upset, obviously that gets the attention of the people on the bench. But the Canucks have a pretty good track record at this. And the fact that they just kind of, you know, rolled with the punches there and continued on, in a way, that was perfectly in character with the identity of this team. Because that game, to me, was all about how the Canucks, you know, just sort of with nine guys who had never played a real playoff game in front of fans, they just kind of, you know, rode the waves, didn't panic, down 1-0 early, down 2-1 in the third. They just kind of kept doing what they've done all year. You know, Adam Foote, and I love this quote so much, I've used it a couple of times. So this is your turn to hear it.
Okay. But
Adam Foote said to me, the biggest thing in the playoffs is the waves seem so big, right? When all the emotion and the intensity, the waves seem so high. But he says they're actually not that big if you can remain calm. And that the key to playoff hockey is to simply try to play the way you've done all year, sticking to the principles that got you there, when every instinct in a playoff atmosphere tells you you've got to do something differently.
Yep.
And, you know, I love that. I love that characterization. And I think that's what the Canucks managed to do in game one.
Okay. I love that. No surprise it comes from Adam Foote. Just as an aside, you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame always ignores defensive defensemen. I know they've tried to remedy that by putting people like Kevin Lowe in recently, but still, I put Adam Foote in the Hall of Fame all day long. It's the one area that's always been neglected. That's for another show. I've always considered, and we'll just focus in here on the Stanley Cup era, okay? The salary cap era of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I've always considered Anaheim's third line in 2007 to be the best third line that I've seen. That was Sammy Paulson, Travis Moen, and Rob Niedermeyer. To the point where I would have given Sammy Paulson, if I voted, the Conn Smythe Trophy. That's how highly I thought of Paulson's performance, and that's how effective that third line was. Are you getting, and it's not just because the two centers are Swedes here, are you getting a sort of Paulson, Moen, Niedermeyer vibe about Lindholm, Joshua, and Connor Garland?
Yeah, you know what? I had not thought of that, Jeff. That's really interesting because I think there are a lot of similarities. Lindholm, Paulson. Lindholm has a much higher offensive side, but Paulson was just...
He was fantastic.
A tremendous player, a really underrated player, a kind of player that every coach in the league adored and most fans didn't get, right? Because there was so much subtlety to his tradecraft. Elias Lindholm is the same way, but he's got a higher offensive ceiling. Mm-hmm. And then the wingers, yeah, Joshua, you know, he's got the power element. He's so strong in the puck. And then Connor Garland, who seems a polar opposite, and maybe that's why he works so well with Dakota Joshua, because he's so different in style, you know, a little guy, and it's all about speed, evasiveness, and creativity, and finding openings. And yet, you know, Connor Garland, when he goes into the corner, he seems like the biggest 5'9" guy who's ever played for the Canucks. And it's not because, I mean, there have been little guys. I mean, Theo Fleury, you think of him going into a corner just bashing guys who were 30 pounds heavier. It's not that Garland is actually trying to use his weight to knock somebody off the puck, but he's so smart with body position, and he's absolutely fearless. He's got a great stick. He comes up with a lot of pucks. I think that combination has the potential to really make the difference, not just in this series, maybe in these playoffs for Vancouver. You know, it was a tough transition for Lindholm for a variety of reasons. Tockett tried him in different places, made a decision in February, Tockett did, that Lindholm is going to anchor the third line. And it, you know, forget about trying to load up the top six or put him with Pettersson to get Pettersson going, which is another issue to talk about. But they wanted to play their best four centers down the middle. And then Lindholm got hurt. Since he's come back from that wrist injury, four games left in the regular season, he's been exactly the player the Canucks hoped they were getting when they paid a small fortune to the Calgary Flames to get him. I think that line, they were outstanding in game one. And Joshua and Garland, I don't know how much attention they've gotten outside of the Vancouver market, but in this market, they have been driving, they've been getting accolades for driving play really since December. That's when they started getting on the score sheet almost every game. But even before that, they were driving play. They just weren't getting rewarded. Those are two guys who's and especially Dakota Joshua, those are two wingers whose games are still elevating, and they're quickly becoming impact players.
One of the most improved players in the NHL. And we've been talking about this last couple of weeks. So, you know, Slafkovský and Byfield and Jarvis and Harley. Dakota Joshua has taken his game to the proverbial next level. Well, we will be tuned in tonight and watching with great anticipation, whether it's non-calls from Rick Tockett, whether it's big saves, whether it's big third-line performances. It is game two tonight, Vancouver Canucks hosting the Nashville Predators. And once again, I suspect we will hear where the streets have no name. Do you have a thought on whether that's a troll or not against Nashville?
I think it's just retro. I think it's retro good vibes. Trying to bring back feelings of when the Canucks had their most successful era in franchise history. With the Sedins and Kessler and all the rest. And I love that part of it.
I love it too. Like, it's such a cool song to come out to. Like, regardless of the history, it's just such a cool song to come out to. All right, enjoy game two.
How much do you think it would cost to get you two to come and play it live? That would be pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Would be a moment, right? If fans are there, the lights go down, the music comes up, and suddenly there's spotlights and there's Bono.
So it's funny you mention that, because how much time do we have here? Really quick story. So we're looking this up here on the, this is after the Nashville Predators went on the run after they weren't allowed to go to the Sphere, Andrew Burnett, the party pooper, all of it. I looked up online, and there are different services that'll book you elite level entertainment acts. And it was over $1 million. But I thought to myself, if Nashville goes on a run here, how did they not at some point invest the $1 million+ to bring, and it would be more than $1 million because the whole entourage and the set and all that. Right. You know, I would think that they would, but you're right. It would be really cool. If here comes the Vancouver Canucks. But first, Bono. That would be tremendous. But again,
we can dream,
Ian. Thanks as always for stopping by, pal. Enjoy game two.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice being on with you again.
Same here. One of our favorites to have around here talking about the Vancouver Canucks, the great Ian McIntyre. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local, Matt Marchese. What are we on today?
Let's look at the Avalanche at the Jets. Puck line is Avs -1.5. Let's go into the Wayback Machine here. The last time the Avs allowed 7 or more goals in a playoff game, May 1st, 2008, in an 8-2 loss to Detroit. Jose Theodore and Peter Budaj on the hook for the 8 goals.
Wow.
Alexander Gorgiev's 7 goals allowed were the most by an Avs or Nordiques goalie. We had to go back to May 8th, 1995, the last season of the Nordiques. Yep. Stefan Fisse allowed 7 goals.
First round draft pick. I thought he was going to be so good. Yeah. He was good. He was a good goalie.
And finally, Winnipeg's 7 goals in a playoff game was the most since they scored 7 against the Preds back on May 1st, 2018. So May 1st, a very significant day for these franchises.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'll tell you what, that one was ripped out of the pages of 1987 with that score.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going back there again. It would be a lot of fun if we did.
It's going to be 2-1.
I think we're...
Or 1-0.
Normally what happens is the coaches get really angry and they turn into the fun police and everything gets locked down.
But it'll be nasty tonight.
I just hope Adam Lowry gets involved. He was very restrained last game.
He's a goal scorer now. The triangle goal.
It's him and Kyle Connor, the elite level snipers on that
triangle goal.
Triangle goal. Very good. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. Chris Weidman joins the program here in a couple of moments, and you'll hear from Ryan Smith, NHL Utah owner, in a couple of moments. Hour two on the horizon. Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360. Back in a flash.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2 across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you listen to your podcast. It's the Merrick Show, Monday to Friday, noon to 2 Eastern. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from Ryan Smith, the owner of NHL Utah. The conversation Elliot and I had with him yesterday. You can find the complete interview. It's about, what is it, Maddie? About 40 minutes, 45 minutes?
38 something. 38. So around 40 minutes.
All right. So Dom cut it down to a reasonable and decent length of time so we don't monopolize your time. You can find that wherever you get your podcast. That's the latest 32 Thoughts pod. We'll play about 10 minutes of it, give you a little sort of flavor of where Ryan Smith is at with this organization right now. And the interesting thing about Smith in Utah at this point is, and you'll get this from talking to him and listening to him in this case, is he's in a hurry to do a lot of things. It's going to sound weird. He's in a hurry to do a lot of things, but he won't be rushed into anything, if you catch my drift. Like, I don't necessarily think this team is going to have a name next year. It might just be NHL Utah. And we're used to that with the PWHL, where it's PWHL Toronto, Montreal, Minnesota, Boston, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We may see that in the NHL, and they don't have a logo yet. They are not going to be rushed into it, although they're going to have to be rushed into a lot of things here as we'll see that team as early as next season. So you hear from Ryan Smith coming up a little bit later on. In the meantime, back to discussing playoff action, and joining me now is NHL defenseman Chris Weidman, who joins me by way of phone. Chris, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. So you're in St. Louis watching hockey games. But before we get and sort of drill down on some of the specifics here, I'm always curious about how players prepare for playoffs, when players prepare for playoffs. Like, at what point in a season, when you know you're heading to the postseason, the players start to say to themselves, okay, now it's time to drill down, make sure everything's okay at home, make sure we get into the routine, all of it. Like, at what point of the season, when you know you're going, do you start to say, okay, now I need to get into playoff mode?
You know, I think just like fans and you know, everybody around the league, that trade deadline date is you know, obviously very important for all teams, but for playoff teams, you know, especially, you're either adding a player or you know, making moves to you know, go on a long run, and I think right about that time is when you're, you know, looking around your dressing room, whether you've added a player or somebody's moved on, and you're looking at, you know, the group that's going to go forward together. And, you know, I think it's, you know, unique in our sport that it is close to the end of the season. And, you know, it's really a fun time of year in and around that date. And then, you know, moving on towards the end of the year in playoffs.
So far in the opening round here, I mean, we're only a few days in, we've seen a little bit of everything. To be honest with you, including, as I like to say, a good old-fashioned batch of hockey dumb, which we saw towards the end of that Carolina-New York Islanders game yesterday with Patrick Roy throwing some meat over the boards when the game was out of hand. No surprises, yeah. Patrick, and no surprise we got what we did. But before we start to drill down on a couple of series here and players, like, what's caught your attention out of everything that you've watched so far? Because I know you're one of the guys that, you know, even if you're not in the playoffs, you're still watching hockey. What's caught your eye so far, Chris?
You know, I think just, you know, one of the series that I'm really drawn to is this Boston-Toronto series. I played against these teams a bunch in my career, sure, being in the same division. But just everything in and around that series is, you know, you had the media attention around Nylander. He doesn't play game one.
Yep.
At least don't come out and play a great game and have a tough result. They responded game two, and then the media, you know, is kind of fixated now on the Boston goaltending situation. So I think it's getting a ton of media attention, but it's a fun series, right? Like, you've got some, you know, incredibly talented players. You've got some players that play down in the lineup that are making an impact. You know, Boston's a great place to play, and in the playoffs, it's even amplified. So it'll be fun to watch this series come back to Toronto. Hopefully, Nylander can get back out on the ice. And, you know, a series after game one that looked like it was going to be over pretty quick now looks like it's going to be probably heading to, you know, hopefully a game six and seven.
I want to ask you about the Nylander phenomenon, or just sort of injuries around this time of year as well. How much, like, if you're in the Maple Leafs dressing room, like, if you're playing for the Maple Leafs right now, I'm speaking with Chris Weidman, if you're playing with the Maple Leafs right now, how much do you know? How much do you want to know? How much are people asking you about it consistently? I mean, listen, I get asked about it a ton. I can only imagine what, you know, being on that Maple Leafs team must bring with it, how many texts and phone calls and conversations about what's up with Nylander do you get? But how much do players, you know, how much would players talk about it? How much would players, just to be blunt, how much would players lie about it to everybody around?
You know, I'll just speak from my personal experience. I would for sure have all the information possible, right? Like, I'm a guy that kind of wants to know what's going on.
Yep.
You know, so I think the players in that dressing room more than likely have, you know, the information. I think that they've probably, for the most part, from what I've seen, done a great job of keeping it internal.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some stuff that, you know, it's a distraction for them. I really don't agree with that. I think it's more of you know, kind of a galvanizing type deal where they all have the information. They're sticking together. They're keeping quiet and they're moving on. So, I think that, it's quite possible, especially after the result last night, that this could be something that they can almost build on. And then when he does return, mm-hmm. You're adding probably, one of the top winners in the game back to the lineup.
You know, one of the things about playoff hockey is we always hear, the officiating changes in the postseason. There's a standard during the regular season, and then that changes. And I kind of look at that and say, I'm not so sure that the officiating changes as much as the players change. Like, it's profound. And I think the referee's reaction is just that It's a reaction to this whole new level that players find themselves at. Agree or disagree, the players change more than the officials in the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree 100% that the players change, right? I've only had one NHL playoff experience. We were able to go on a great run in 2017 yep. in Ottawa, but we added a player in Alex Burrows, who I've actually played for in Montreal the last few years. And he really opened my eyes to the NHL experience. He had played in the playoffs a ton. He'd been very successful, but watching him explain to our team when he came in, like, hey, we're going to play against the same team for seven games. It's super important to take a piece out of every single person you can as early as you can in the series, right? Like, yeah. Let's say you bump a guy in game one and then somebody gets him good in game two. Well, now he's either thinking about it or he's feeling it. Like, that's a real thing. And I think, the first round is always so exciting to watch because everybody's more or less healthy. Right.
Right.
And guys are going so hard and trying to, really, intimidate physically or mentally the other team, because, during the regular season, you may have played a team in November and not see him again until March. So it's mm-hmm. really, you lose that, where you can really wear a team down. And I believe that's a massive part of having success in the playoffs.
I want to ask you about that 2017 run. And there's a lot there. Like, that was super exciting. And I know how much like that, oh man, the Kunitz goal was a crusher. But let me ask you about the idea of getting homework before every series. Like, were you a team that would assign a player to another player on the other team just to find out all you can so you can distract him with chirps either from the bench, on the ice? Like, Chicago and Philadelphia, I was always told, was like, that was vicious. Like, as far as, like, first of all, you look at all the players that were on the Blackhawks team at that point too, and it's a relentless, steady stream of chirps coming from that bench. But, teams have been known to sort of, assign a player to another player on that team. It's your job to go find out as much as you can so we can be armed with as much ammunition to unload on the ice at those players. Were you given a homework assignment at any point during that run?
I think we did a great job in the game within the game assignments during that run. For homework, Guy Boucher was the head coach. He had, he's as detailed as a coach as I've ever seen. Yeah. The information that we had, you look at our roster, like, we had a good group of players, but nobody picked us to go that far. Like,
yep.
I think he got every ounce out of that group. And then, we had the generational talent in Eric Carlson on the blue line. He was fantastic during that run. So fun to watch him play every night. And it was just we had a great group of guys that really just, as we got going and got rolling, it became so fun to be together. And we just never wanted it to end. And, losing in game seven of the conference finals in double overtime was devastating. But, looking back on it, probably one of my more fun hockey experiences.
I was at an Italian restaurant. I remember where it was one of those games where you remember where you were. I was at an Italian restaurant in Windsor with Colby Armstrong, Todd Warner, and who else was with us? It was during Memorial Cup, when Windsor was Rocky Dundas. Rocky Dundas, the old New York Islander, was there, and we were all watching, and the place was going crazy. for your Ottawa Senators. And when that goal went in, it was like all the oxygen just got completely sucked out of the room because everybody went along with that Ottawa Senators story. Like, well, what do you recall from that run? Like, what highlights can you pull out of it? Because I'm sure people still come up to you and say, like, hey, look at my case. I was at an Italian restaurant in Windsor for the Memorial Cup, and that's where I was at for that final game. I'm sure you have people coming up and saying, like, this is where I was for that game. What memories do you pull out of that run?
You know, there were so many great experiences with your teammates and you know, kind of being an underdog. You know, we beat Boston in the first round, New York in the second round. And, you know, we went on the road and played in some tough environments and had success. But, you know, the one personally for me that was funny, I think it was game two in Ottawa. We won against Boston and we were down early and it was like a Saturday afternoon game. So we were on national TV in the States and, you know, a guy from St. Louis, like my friends, family, and just, you know, people that I've known throughout the years don't really get to watch our team play on TV all that much. And I ended up scoring in that game and we went on to win. And after the game, I had, you know, all these messages from people like, hey, I didn't even know you were still playing. You know, I'm responding. I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, we get paid and we have, you know, the same uniforms. It's awesome. Like it's a real fun way to make a living. Like this is, you know, it's a real thing. So, that's what I always think about. It was like, you know, and as we moved along in the playoffs, we got some more national coverage in the States, which was cool.
Yep.
You know, for me personally, it was, looking back on it and, you know, when you're young, you think that it's something that's going to happen a bunch in your career. And then as you get older, you understand, you know, making the playoffs is extremely difficult, but then, you know, winning each round is something that should be celebrated because it is so hard to do.
Oh yeah. You know, I always think, you know, similar to that story, I always think about Ron Hainsey. I mean, it was trending towards, you know, Ron Hainsey going through an entire career, multi-year and, you know, never making the playoffs. And then, you know, his first shot at it, he wins the Stanley Cup, and we think of Jay Bouwmeester in St. Louis, where you live, and he finally gets a shot at it, and you know, wins the Stanley Cup in 2019. One more thing about that 2017 run, it's one of the greatest plays we've ever seen, and you know where I'm going here. It's one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in the game of hockey. The pass was glorious, receiving the pass was incredible, and then the move to score the goal. Just made it a trifecta, the hat trick of greatness. Where were you? Describe what you thought of when you saw the Erik Karlsson to Mike Hoffman play against the Bruins.
I thought he shot it out of the rink. I was for sure. Like, I'll be honest with you. During that run, I was basically like Eric's caddy. Like, I was the guy that had to go out. I was the guy that had to go out and play, you know, 10, 12 minutes so that he could catch his breath on the bench and then he played the rest of the game. So I got a front row seat to, you know, one of the best playoff performances, like just the whole thing he put together. But,
yeah,
you know, that particular play was incredible. I mean, I think he's, you know, standing behind the net, takes, you know, a step to his right and just, you know, fires it 15 feet in the air.
Yeah.
For about 80, 90 feet. And everybody's kind of looking around like, what, you know, where's he going with this thing? And then, you know, Mike Hoffman being Mike Hoffman has got to, you know, put the cherry on top of that one. And you know, I don't know who made a better play on that. Honestly, it was that special. So, you know, I think that, again, winning that series, doing it, you know, against Boston, I think we won, game six in Boston, like, that really brought that group together and allowed us to have the confidence to move on and play some good hockey after that.
You know, I'm glad you bigged up Mike Hoffman there because, you know, we look at that play and we focus so much on the pass. I mean, listen, it's a glorious pass. I'm talking to Chris Weidman here. It's a beautiful pass, but like, Hoffman doesn't break stride. It's perfect, stays on side, all of it. Part of it is, of course, the great pass for Erik Karlsson, but I think that that Hoffman's kind of been lost to history on all of it. That's a great job receiving that pass, not breaking stride, and going in and scoring the way that he did.
Yeah, I mean, ultra talented guy. You know, he was He could shoot the puck, handle the puck. I mean, he's just a very highly skilled player. But, I mean, I don't know what your take is on this, but it seems like every time there's an unbelievable pass or, you know, somebody dances one of the D-men, it's like the puck always finds a way in the net, seems like, and it's always a highlight. And it's, you know, I don't know if it's the goalie being like, you know, wanting to show up his team, like, come on, where's the help or not. But it always seems that it always seems that way. And again, you know, I think that the pass is incredible, but you know, I do believe Mike deserves a little bit of credit for the finish.
100%. I don't think we're showing that goal as often as we do. We're not showing that play if it's not a goal at the end, and that is all Mike Hoffman. Outside of the Toronto-Boston series, which you have an eyeball on right now, what else is intriguing you out there right now? I mean, we just had a game ripped out of the pages of 1987 from the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. We've seen a complete collapse by the Islanders yesterday. What else is doing it for you these days, Chris?
Let's talk, you know, Winnipeg, Colorado. That was what I was going to bring up. I mean, so, you know, you're going into game one and you're going to tell people that Hellebuck's going to give up 6 goals and you're going to win. Would you believe that?
Yeah.
Like, that was, you know, you're talking one extremely high-powered offense. And then Winnipeg, that's a very sound defensive team with an unbelievable goalie. And now they're showing people that they can win, you know, a up and down track meet type game.
Yep.
You know, they're going to be a problem in the West, in my opinion. I think, you know, Hellebuck's definitely a goalie that could steal you a series. They've brought in Monahan and Toffoli, 2 veteran guys. Toffoli's, you know, been on cup teams. He's had success in the playoffs. Like, those are real difference makers in the locker room. When they're guys that can come in and speak on experience. So I think that, you know, maybe the question mark would be on the blue line, but you've got Josh Morrissey, who in my opinion is quietly one of the best defenders in the whole game.
Agree. Completely agree. The one thing that I do wonder about here, and you can speak with authority on this as a defenseman, when you're in a situation like Colorado is in, and just to be blunt, like, there's a crisis of faith around the net minding there with Alexander Georgiev. What do you do as a team? What do you do specifically as a blue line when you're worried that everything that goes towards the net is going to go in? How do you change? And if you're Colorado, given your strength is, like, we're just going to overpower teams and outscore them, can you even change?
Well, I think that, you know, their best defense is going to be their offense, right? And that doesn't mean you have to score 7 goals to win.
Yeah.
They're a puck possession team, right? So if you can possess the puck, if you can, you know, attack in ways where if you have to put the puck in deep or dump the puck, there's situations where you have a chance to retrieve it. It's not just coming right back at you. So I think maybe just a little bit more, you know, focus on that. I don't believe that, you know, statistically, I don't know what the save percentage was in game one, but I mean, that's well below the statistical average. I wouldn't say that that's going to be likely to happen in game two or on, but, you know, I think that, when there is, you know, a seed of doubt, it's definitely going to be a focus. And how can we, you know, help a member of our team that's had a struggle, right? It could have been very easily the top line not scoring. Okay, well, how can we support them? Or the blue line, you know, making mistakes. So I don't think it's going to be something where they're like, okay, we got to sit back and really focus on defending here, because that's not who they are.
Let me close here. I'm talking to Chris Weidman, NHL defenseman. Let me ask you about Connor McDavid. Now, I was having a conversation with someone over the weekend, and we were talking about McDavid and all the things he did and all the things that he does. And we did it again last night, 5 points against the Los Angeles Kings, 5 assists rather. And in game one of his NHL career, I remember it like it was yesterday, because there was one thing that happened in that game that I still think about often. So it's a Thursday night. Edmonton's opening up on the road. They're playing the St. Louis Blues. And up until that game, I had never seen Jay Bouwmeester, who's, you know, C-cut master, beautiful skater, all of it, gorgeous defenseman. I had never seen him turn his back on a play and skate forward into his own zone. And McDavid grabbed the puck. I think it was in the second period. He's on Bouwmeester's side, and he starts to gather up speed, and I couldn't believe it. For the first time, I think maybe in his career, he showed his nameplate. I had never seen that before. Do you have a thought on what we're seeing with Connor McDavid here? Just another casual ho-hum 5-point night for McDavid again yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we can get to that, but I've got a great, I mean, I did a brief stint in Edmonton and got to play with Connor and you know, one of my favorite memories from that whole experience, other than getting to play with him and Draisaitl on some of the other guys, was, you know, we had our dad's trip, right? And so all the dads come into Edmonton and you know, we played a home game, and I don't remember who it was against, but, you know, I couldn't have played more than 12 minutes, right? And after the game, I'm exhausted, right? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm going to have a beer with my dad in the dressing room, show him around, like, you know, do the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm giving my dad a locker room tour, and we each have a beer in hand, really enjoying the moment and everything. And I'm showing him the gym. I walk into the gym, open the door for him, and there's music blasting. And Connor's in there by himself, training, doing his normal routine. And he had just played like 25 minutes as a forward, probably had, you know, 3-4 points, whatever. And my dad's looking at me and was like, this is incredible, right? Like, everybody knows what they see on the ice. It's spectacular, but he is truly, you know, one of the most dedicated and focused people that I've ever been around. And not to mention a great teammate and great guy.
Yep.
You know, he was so good to me during my time there. But, you know, what people are seeing on the ice right now is truly special, and it is not by chance. This guy works, you know, every single day, and, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch.
You know, I'll tell you, that reminds me of a story that that Colby Armstrong told me about, you know, when he first started playing with the Pittsburgh Penguins, called up from Wilkes-Barre in the American Hockey League. And it might have been after a game as well. He goes into the Penguins gym, and there's Crosby, who's working harder than anybody else. And he's already, you know, the best player in the league by a country mile. And he's working harder than anybody on the team. And Colby goes up to him and says, Sid, is there like another league that I don't know about that you're trying to make? Like, is there something higher than the NHL here? Like, you're the best player in the world, and you're working harder than anybody else. Is there another league, a secret league that we don't know about that you're trying to make? Listen, this has been a lot of fun. Let's do it again, Chris. Thanks so much for stopping by and sharing your expertise and memories of 2017. Was a real fun run for your former Ottawa Senators. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one.
We'll talk soon. Chris Weidman, NHL defenseman, most recently with the Montreal Canadiens. Matty, when you look around the NHL right now, specifically from last night, I mean, we had a good whack at the pinata of the, you know, the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you have a thought on what we saw with Vegas and Dallas? A game that, again, if you're the Dallas Stars, it was a wild first period, first of all. 5 goals in that first period. Shades of, you know, Sunday between Winnipeg and the Colorado Avalanche. That's a game that I wonder how many people are now going to start to say, we thought that Jake Oettinger was fixed. And we thought Jake Oettinger was back. Are you having questions about Jake Oettinger? Or was that just, that's why the Vegas Golden Knights are the Stanley Cup champions?
I think a combination of both. I don't think Jake Oettinger is quote-unquote fixed. But I also think that Vegas is a really good hockey team. So I kind of look at it both ways. But when we talk about the Dallas Stars, what was the one thing that we talked about going in? If there was a question about anything,
goaltending.
It was going to be the goaltending, which 2 years ago, I don't think we would have had that conversation about Jake Oettinger.
Oh, not after the Calgary series
No.
where we're talking about he's the next Carey Price.
Yeah.
And I was guilty of saying it too. That's the next Carey Price, I think, came out of my mouth.
Yeah. And now we look at it and go, okay, like how long is the leash here? Because we talked about it yesterday. The Dallas Stars have Stanley Cup aspirations. If Jake Oettinger has another game like he did yesterday.
Yeah, go to Wedgwood.
Do you? Like, boy, oh boy, you got to make a decision, because if you have another dud like that, I still think this is a long series.
I do too, and I still think Dallas can win it.
I do too.
It's one game. They lost at home. I get it. So best case scenario, you have a split. But I think Dallas can win the Stanley Cup, and I still think Dallas can win the Stanley Cup. Man, they get a bad draw, though.
I think whoever wins this series represents...
Put myself at the top of the list.
Okay, I'll be second.
All season long, what did I say? What did other people say about the Central Division? When you look around the entire NHL...
Don't finish second or third.
You need to finish first. You need to win the Central.
I said the same thing.
You don't want to face what's awaiting if you finish two or three.
But you didn't think. But you also didn't think Vegas was going to finish as the second wild card.
I know. But that's just it.
They lost. Oh, they lost against Anaheim the last game of the year. You and I talked about it, and I said we were talking about it the Thursday.
Yeah.
And I said to you, I was like, okay, well, it's going to be LA's going to finish as the second wild card because they're playing Chicago. They should beat Chicago. Mm-hmm. But Anaheim should get absolutely waxed by Vegas. Last game, whatever. And now I'm looking at going, okay, this sets up a pretty good matchup in round one. I mean, probably the best one in terms of how good each team is.
Oh, yeah.
You could make the argument that Vegas is maybe the second best team in the West. And they're playing maybe the best team in the West. You could make that argument. That's frightening.
Logan Thompson with the Mason Marchment goal last night. Not a big fan of it.
I didn't love the Robertson one either, though.
To end the first period, you didn't like that one?
No.
That's a great shot. Jason Robertson, man.
It is. But Logan Thompson didn't go down at all. Like, and I know Jason Robertson's a great shooter, but I watched it and I went, oh, boy, I didn't love it.
I'm thinking that he probably thought, I've got the angle on this. I don't need to go down.
Yeah.
I have the angle on this one. And then, listen, it's a great shot by a great shooter.
Yeah.
Like at the end of it, I didn't mind that one as much as you did. I thought Logan Thompson had a really good game last night.
So I was asked this question today on Calgary Radio.
Okay.
I was on with the Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose. And they asked me, I think it was Matty that asked me, of these three teams, which tandem in net do you trust the most? Vegas, Colorado, or who's the other one?
Well, it ain't Colorado.
It's not. No, well, no. Or was it? It wasn't Dallas. I should probably have figured out what the question was before
Between those two, LA, I trust LA. Vegas's more.
So my argument was that I trust both of Vegas's goalies more than I trust any of the other four.
I think that's a reflection, too, of the defense, though. Like, honestly, to me, the goalie story for the Vegas Golden Knights, with all due respect to Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson, is all about that blue line, too.
But
it's not, like, honestly, not that you can just, like, insert random goaltender here and they're going to be, you know, contenders for the Conn Smythe. Well,
maybe you could have made that argument last year because it went to five.
You don't need Patrick Waugh, Ed Belfour. Like, you don't need, like, an elite-level Hall of Fame goaltender.
But also
to win a Stanley Cup with that blue line.
But also,
like
LA, have,
like, isn't this the lesson of recent history in the NHL? Is ideally you have both, but really you only need one. You either have the goaltender or you have the blue line.
Yeah,
you have to have one of those two things.
I was telling somebody yesterday, like, if you look historically the last 20 years, how many teams that have won the Cup have had that elite goaltender?
Oh, no, I know.
It's not a long list.
Yeah, that's the story.
But my argument would be, like, Los Angeles can play lockdown defense. I mean, they didn't do a good job of it yesterday, but they can play lockdown defense. But we've had that question about Cam Talbot since they went on that lengthy losing streak and Todd McClellan lost his job.
Yeah.
So I trust both of the Vegas goalies more than I trust the other four.
Yeah.
And if Gorgiev gets blown up again, you're not starting game three. He's not. Colorado called up Prosvitov, too.
Oh, Ivan Prosvitov? Yeah, they claimed on waivers from Arizona.
Yeah, so they called him up. So I would assume that means that Eustace for All is not ready to play.
Yeah, it sounds like he's still sick. That was the word yesterday. So calling up Prosvitov doesn't surprise at all.
Yeah.
The question is, what if Winnipeg scores two quick ones tonight?
That'd be bam, bam. Yeah, that'd be like little Bo Peep pulling the sheep in with the hook there. Right out of the cage.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Bednar was not thrilled and said as much after the game. And Cale Makar essentially just, like, roasted his goaltender by saying, yeah, all the mistakes we made ended up in the back of the net.
Six of 10 scoring chances, legit scoring chances, ended up in the net.
Game one.
Not
game
great.
Game one, you're taking that rip at your goaltender. Woof.
That's a frustration from all season, though, Jeff.
100%. I get it. Trust me. I know. I get that one. We'll hit a break. When we come back, you're going to hear part of the podcast that Elliot and I did yesterday that just came out this morning. This is our conversation with Ryan Smith, the owner of NHL Utah. Stay tuned for that in a couple of moments here. Merrick Show returns across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you haven't heard him yet, stick around. Fascinating guy. Ryan Smith, owner of NHL's latest entry, NHL Utah. They don't have a name. They don't have a logo. They still might not. I did ask him about what colors, and he kind of hinted at purple. Kind of like the Utah Jazz. Stay tuned. Ryan Smith is next.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Maddie with a quick update from the world of hockey for tonight's Vancouver-Nashville matchup.
Optional skate today for the Canucks.
Always.
Demko not out there, and he did not skate yesterday. Mm-hmm. And apparently he got treatment after game one.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's a lot less secretive than William Nylander.
What does this mean for Toronto?
No,
the Maple Leafs game.
It's just funny.
How does this affect the Maple Leafs?
It's just funny because that's the goalie, like, you know, the most important position on the ice. Yeah.
Okay, so let's see what happens there. I would still strongly suspect that Thatcher Demko will be a starting netminder tonight, but we shall see. As we like to say around these parts, around playoff time, you need to be the master of deception. And as I've always said before, would you lie to win the Stanley Cup? The answer is always. Okay, there's a new owner in the NHL ranks. He is Ryan Smith. And as he points out in this and has pointed out in other interviews, it's not just him, it's his wife, Ashley. It's Ryan and Ashley Smith, Smith Entertainment Group. Both have their own co-ventures, both have their own individual ventures. We know this is a group that owns Utah Jazz of the NBA. They now own NHL Utah. Elliot and I sat down with Ryan Smith last June, and within 1 year, he had an NHL franchise. So this is my not-so-subtle message. Anyone, any other billionaires out there, you want an NHL team, the key is 32 Thoughts Podcast. We sat down with Ryan yesterday afternoon. Here is Ryan Smith, the owner of NHL Utah. Ryan, if I told you last June when we first spoke here on this podcast that within 12 months you would be the owner of an NHL franchise, you would have said what? And welcome to the podcast again, by the way.
Yeah, welcome, man. It's good to be here. Look, I probably would have said that's the way it was supposed to be and the way that we planned it, but reality is like, that's not right. No, I think timing is everything on all of this with sports and with business and everything else. And like, sometimes timing works out, sometimes it doesn't. I'm still kind of waking up going, all right, we're doing this. So we're still a little bit in like digestion mode. Like, okay, how do we digest this? How do we set this up for success? How do we show that Utah is a fresh start and something that these guys get to go do for the first time ever? And they'll probably never do something like this again in their entire careers. And that's an exciting thing. So we're all just kind of working together on it. So I haven't taken a lot of time to inhale and say, hey, we've got this team, like, oh my word. It's been much more like, all right, how do we go make it be everything we thought it would be when we asked for it or wanted it?
Ryan, I was watching you on Pat McAfee earlier Monday, and you said something very interesting, and that is that in early March, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly came to you about this, and your philosophy was, don't say no. Say yes, you can do it, and then figure it out. Two questions for you. Can you take us through the timeline? And secondly, I love that philosophy, but did any part of you say, we can't do this quickly?
So the timeline's been pretty well articulated around, you know, really it came down to a couple of weeks before then saying, hey, could you guys play and how many seats are in there? And for us, it was really like, okay, how many can we start with? And then can we run a full reno on the arena and not ruin the basketball experience? Because the basketball experience is incredible in Utah. It's one of the steepest sloped arenas out there. And then how do we actually do something different that we think has not been done in an arena for both basketball and hockey? Typically, the way to accommodate both is you kind of make the bowl wider. And what if we were able to, like, innovate around that? And so when that came back as yes, then it was like, okay, everything else is around, you know, really just execution of landing the team, starting the team, branding the team, putting this up. And even as we got down to it, it's like, okay, really, what is this? Is this a reload? It's not an expansion. And it's like neither. It's legitimately like we're starting a new franchise and we're doing it with this group of people. And that's what that was the deal. And that's really what we've acquired. And so I think that's exciting because we all get to kind of put our hands in the middle and say, let's go do this together and build up from here. So it is unprecedented. It's not anything I've ever seen in sports. But at the same time, you know, we've got a hot market. We're only an hour away from Arizona. And so it's worked out about as well as we could so far. Now it's just, okay, we got 4 months to get ready to go.
I know a name and a logo and all these things are going to come eventually. I am curious, when you close your eyes and you think about this team and what they're going to visually look like on the ice, is there going to be a symmetry in your mind between your hockey team and your basketball team? Do you want them to look profoundly different? How, in your mind, does this team look? Whether it's, you know, the sweaters, the helmets, the socks, the pants, all of it. What does it look like in your head?
Yeah, I mean, we brought back purple, and we're going to continue to do that for basketball. I think there's a mountain component that we authentically kind of own, especially in the NBA. If you look at the mountains on the jersey, and I think that kind of breeds a little bit of a color palette naturally, you know, fresh ice, the whole setup, blue skies, like you see that. And so I think that there, if you were in a dream scenario, there's a Venn diagram where you've got the Jazz and this team, and like there's a little bit of a Venn diagram where things could. And look, I mean, we've hired Doubleday, and they're the ones that are going to come up with this. But, like, kind of overlap. And then I think both teams, given like, the NBA jerseys and the sweaters and the helmets and all this stuff, like, there's a lot of innovation being done around those. And so you've got to leave a little room for teams to get out and do special stuff that's not going to be part of that diagram. But I think there could be a really cool symmetry, and I don't think it has to be just, like, you know, Pittsburgh or everything else where everything's the exact same color. That's my thought though. But, you know, look, we've hired the best in the world to go do this. The goal is we want it to be by Utah for Utah and let our fans and our people and our players come and, like, you know, take part in creating that. It's part of the beauty of this is, like, I was telling the guys last week, I said, you know, you'll probably be in a spot where you're going to be asked a lot of questions and your opinions, maybe for the first time ever in your careers. And I think if we already had an established franchise, I'm not sure we'd be asking this much input. But we really want to know what you care about because we're going to build it all out from scratch. And, you know, rather than guess on everything or assume on everything, like, we want all of your input and you get a chance to kind of craft like the perfect setup. And that's the benefit of being able to start a new franchise.
Mm-hmm. Elliot and I have bantered this one back and forth a couple of different times, and I'm really, like, I'm genuinely curious about this as someone who's followed hockey my whole life. I think we looked at this and said, okay, what is it? Is it expansion? Is it relocation? There's an Arizona Coyotes team that right now is dormant. But one of the questions that Elliot and I have bandied about is, where does the history go? And essentially what I'm asking Is Shane Doan your leading scorer, or does your leading scorer not exist yet?
That's really difficult. You know, you want them to feel like they have a spot in it, but, you know, I think the better question is, you know, I'm assuming the Coyotes are going back. So in that case, it seems like they would carry that history with them. If they don't come back, like, I don't know.
So you know what I mean?
I'm
with you. Like, I keep going back and forth in my own head about it as well. So you haven't been told either way or had discussions about, you know, your this organization has gone from Arizona to Utah, and along with it, you know, with the purchase here, the history comes along with it too.
No, it actually isn't. And I understand this. I remember, you know, playing golf with a Hall of Fame NBA player who looked at me at the first round and said, "Hey, you know, you inherited all the DNA when I took over the Jazz." And so, like, the history comes with it. And he's like, "In the good, the bad, the ugly, it's all you. I know you're like 2 months on the job, but like, you're now carrying all of it." And so I understand how the history is a big part of it. I think it either comes or it doesn't. I don't know that you organically be like, "Yeah, I want those boxes. Yeah, give me all the history. Give me the skate sharpeners. Give me everything else." Like, I don't think you choose that in a way. I think you just kind of gotta let time bear it out.
You never get a second chance to make a first impression. It was set up so that after the sale was official, you could meet with the Coyotes players in Arizona. I heard you did very well. How did you prepare for that? What was the most important message that you had to give to them?
Look, I don't know what you hear. I imagine you're pretty well connected. Look, there's no way to really prepare. Like, I mean, my first message was just like thanking the leadership, because it seemed like it had been pretty noisy around the team and the uncertainty of the situation. And I'm one that always says I think people can handle change pretty well. I think handling uncertainty really takes a toll for a long period of time. And so I think that they handled a lot of uncertainty, right or wrong, like whatever it was. And so I was just grateful that they could do that. And the next was just trying to introduce myself and my wife, Ashley, and just, this is who we are, and this is what you can hopefully expect. And that we're real people, and, like, you know, we're not perfect at everything, but we'll try hard, and we'll try to listen and be collaborative, and actually just create a good experience for you all and for everyone else. And so, and I think that's just kind of it. I mean, there's only one story with me. You know, there's not multiple stories. This is who I am. Kind of, you know, this is how I roll. And, you know, I just wanted to look everyone in the eye and dap them up a bit so they could just realize, like, one by one that, like, I care about them personally, and you'll get a chance to see that over time.
That's Ryan Smith, the owner of NHL Utah, the NHL's newest owner. And if you want to hear the entire podcast, all, what is it, Maddie, 38 minutes worth?
Yeah, about 40 minutes. I cut off a bunch of your babble at the beginning with Elliot.
How dare you,
man. Yeah, so it's about that.
How dare you, Maddie. You can hear it wherever you get your podcasts. That is the 32 Thoughts podcast that came out earlier today. So a couple of things. One, I want to get to Vancouver here in a second.
This Boy, do you ever.
This is an important update. Really quickly, in that interview, I asked Ryan Smith about the history. Mm-hmm. And does the history of the team still travel? So is Shane Doan your leading goal scorer, for mm-hmm. example. So Craig Morgan tweeted out, after I would imagine hearing that, "I received some clarification from NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly regarding Coyotes' history." Quote, this is from Daly, The history belongs to Alex Morello as long as he has the franchise.
Okay.
If he's not successful in bringing the franchise back, does it just go to the new owner, whomever that is going to be? Desenti, is the history now in limbo as well?
I would say so.
So the history is in limbo. There you go.
It is on pause.
It's paused. It's paused. It's great for Shane Doan. So you will keep your Arizona Coyotes records. Vancouver Canucks, give us the latest.
Oh, boy. So this is from our pal, Elliot Friedman.
Yeah.
Hearing Thatcher Demko injured and questionable for the rest of the series. That
is a killer.
Is a tough one. Did something happen in game one that
and
I missed?
He played so well.
Unless he tweaked something on that one big save in the first period.
Okay, so Thatcher Demko.
Not great.
Not good news.
No.
Anything else?
Yeah.
By way of, like, that is going to be the dominant
headline.
That's
the big one.
That's the dominant headline for the rest of the afternoon, and that's a protein shake for Vancouver Sports Talk Radio.
Yeah. Not a good one, though. It tastes really bad.
Not a good one, but let's go to the phones.
We also have some other injury news. Hurricanes defenseman Brett Pesce will be reassessed today.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that earlier. He left the game yesterday. Didn't look good.
Yeah, Rod Brindamore stated didn't look great.
Yeah.
So, and then Bruins defenseman Andrew Peak week to week will not travel to Toronto. Mason Lorie recalled from Providence.
Okay, so there's the very latest, and enjoy it tonight. It'll start with the Caps and the Rangers on Sportsnet at 7 o'clock Eastern. The Bolts and the Panthers. That's good. 7:30 Eastern on 360 on CBC. You can watch the Jets and the Avalanche and the Preds and the Canucks on Sportsnet later. Thanks to everyone who took part in today's program. Thanks to Chris Weidman, NHL defenseman. Thanks to Ian McIntyre from Sportsnet. And thanks to Elliot Friedman, who kicked it off. And then finished it up with a tweet about Thatcher Demko. Bad news there for the Vancouver Canucks. That sucks. Thanks to Matt Marchese. Yeah, thank you, Matty the Mustache Man. And thanks to Lance Kennedy, technical operator, camera operator, Jen Rolnick. Thanks to you for listening or downloading or watching. We're back tomorrow to talk about tonight's action in 22 hours. Enjoy it.